Oscar Tabatani, come on down. You're the host of the Insurgent Radio Network, broadcasting live from the bunker in North Central Indiana, right next to Tabatani's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to eat, but mostly drink. Also nearby is Tabatani's Weapons of Mass Destruction Used Equipment Yard, where you can purchase a freshly refurbished weapon of mass destruction for pennies on the dollar, if the price is right. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Address your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, the Insurgent, just plain old box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
And we've added White Aryan Resistance onto that box, so either way you send it, Insurgent or White Aryan Resistance will get it, and your checks can either be Insurgent or White Aryan Resistance, either way, and we can take care of that, no problem. We take care of all problems that are simple here in the bunker. Do you remember back about 20 years ago when, what was her name, Billie Jean something or other, took on the male tennis player? I forgot his name, too. That's the trouble with old age. But they made it a big deal, right? The female against the male. And she won. And she won, I guess, twice against him. And, boy, that was coast to coast and all around the world and everything else. Well, I'll bet you haven't heard this one. We've got a clip here about 9 minutes long about Serena Williams and her sister up against white men tennis players. And it came out a little bit different this time. Have a listen.
I've been thinking about for quite some time, but given Stardust's recent video addressing statements made by Total Biscuit, I think it's probably the ideal time to make a video about it. To start off with, I want to relay an anecdote about a somewhat forgotten match of tennis. In the lead-up to the 1998 Australian Open, the Williams sisters had been watching some of the male tennis players' training sessions, and they convinced themselves on the basis of what they saw that they'd be able to beat a male player ranked around 200th in the world. And so a vanity match was arranged with Carsten Brasch, German ranked 203rd at the time. I've added a link in the low bar to an article written by Brasch himself in case you're interested in reading his version of events in full, but I think the title of the piece pretty much says it all. How to beat both Williams sisters in one afternoon. And he didn't just beat them, he obliterated them in straight sets, one after the other. Serena lost 6-1 and Venus 6-2. Serena Williams may in fact be the greatest female tennis player to have ever lived, but when facing off against a man, she can't even remotely begin to crack the top 200. And that in itself is a fairly generous statement. 1 week later, Brasch's ranking slipped down to 350th during that particular Australian Open. As he comically puts it himself, apparently after the game, Serena and Venus immediately told the press they wanted to challenge a male player again. This time they revised the ranking of the man they wanted to face to 350 in the world. I informed the journalist who told me this that in the next week I was set to lose a lot of ATP points and drop down to 350 in the rankings. I told him that if Venus and Serena waited just 1 week, they could challenge me all over again. Now, I don't think this outcome really surprises anyone. Even the most batshit insane rad femme who spends most of their day arguing that gender is a social construct probably doesn't actually want to see tennis, or any other competitive physical sport for that matter, become a mixed gender competition. Deep down beneath all the postmodern insanity, even they realise the implications that no woman would ever win at Wimbledon again. However, what happens when we cross the threshold from physical ability to mental ability? Anatomically, men are 30% stronger by body mass, but in an e-sport that abstracts physical ability by means of a low exertion control interface like a keyboard or mouse, those issues of physical sexual dimorphism shouldn't be relevant. It should be a completely level playing field, or at least that's the common assumption. This is Toss Girl. As Total Biscuit put it, the Korean StarCraft League had one female pro gamer who lost to Idra and cried. This is her. To give you some background, she consistently won the South Korean Game TV Female StarCraft League, taking consecutive national titles in 2003, 2004 and 2005. According to Wikipedia, after the disappearance of the female leagues in late 2005, Tossgirl has continued to play in regular tournaments with limited success. Her most prominent victories in recent years were beating Modern 2-0 in the GOM TV Classic, the first win by a female in a Kespa-sanctioned tournament, and in 2009 she was able to beat Max in the MSL preliminary round. Now, it's interesting to note here that she appears to have no official Kespa ranking, and the GOM TV Classic is not listed amongst her accomplishments, which makes me think that when the Wikipedia article says she achieved the first win by a female in a Kespa-sanctioned tournament, it's actually a rather generous way of saying that she won a couple of matches in a tournament rather than actually winning the tournament. Even when women lose in a meritocratic competition of skill, we still have to bend over backwards to pretend like she didn't. That said, I'm only peripherally involved with gaming. If you're a mad esport fanatic and I've got her credentials all wrong here, please let me know in the comments section. So, even though the apparent physiological differences between the genders should be leveled in a virtual environment, the consistently top-ranked female player isn't even remotely competitive when thrown into the arena with men. I suspect it has in large part to do with sample size. Not as many women play StarCraft, assuming that Tossgirl is at the top end of the bell curve. In a female-only tournament of 100 people, she might only be facing 2 or 3 people at her own level of skill. In an open tournament consisting of 1,000 people, she might be facing maybe 20 or 30 people that could beat her. But even accounting for sample size, assuming she is in that top 3 to 5%, I still think you'd expect to see a few more wins than a couple of matches in a GOM TV Classic and a single 2009 MSL preliminary round. This raises the question, as with real-world physical sports, are women less able to compete with men on a mental playing field, and if so, why? Well, there isn't a lot of information on the nature of games like StarCraft. It's such a relatively new activity that people are still basically arguing about whether esport is even a legitimate term to describe the more competitive end of the gaming spectrum. There is, however, another much older form of mental competition which has already undergone much of the same arguments and debates about the gender disparity that modern gaming is going through today. Yes, I am talking about that filthy patriarchal boys' club known as chess. And so I bring your attention to an article on science blogs titled, "Why Are There So Few Female Chess Grandmasters?" I don't think you really need to read the whole article in full. You can probably guess the kind of gynocentric platitudes it's full of, but I just want to address what I think are the key points that we repeatedly hear raised when discussing these topics. 3 years ago, Lawrence Summers, former president of Harvard University, claimed that genetic differences between the sexes led to a different ability of aptitude at the high end. He's wildly derided led to his dismissal, but his views are by no means uncommon. In the same year, Paul Irwin and Richard Lynn conducted a review of existing studies on sex differences in intelligence and concluded, different proportions of men and women with high IQs may go some way to explaining the greater number of men achieving distinctions of various kinds for which a high IQ is required, such as chess grandmasters, field medalists for mathematics, Nobel Prize winners, and the like. So why are there so few female chess grandmasters? Because fewer women play chess. It's that simple. This overlooked fact accounts for so much of the observable difference that other possible explanations, be they biological, cultural, or environmental, are just fighting for scraps at the table. Yeah, it's somewhat disappointing that a person writing for a site called Science Blogs would basically conclude that there are less women because there are less women. Circular reasoning aside, this argument suffers from the same fault that most arguments attempting to explain gender disparity suffer from. It's a problem of regress. Simply stating that there are less female grandmasters because there are less female chess players gets us no closer to an understanding of why women on aggregate don't take up these rigorous mental activities at the same rate as men. The fact that there are less female players, which despite Yong's claim is hardly an overlooked fact, in no way invalidates or even addresses the other possible explanations, be they biological, cultural or environmental, as to why fewer women take up chess in the first place. The simplest explanations are generally the best explanations, and despite his sophistry and circular reasoning in this article, I think the simplest explanation is still that men and women have innately different aptitudes and interests. Now, with that said, I think aptitude in this case possibly encompasses factors far broader than simply IQ, as Irwin and Lynn's meta-study on sex differences in intelligence would indicate, although that quite obviously is a prominent factor. Some months after reading that article on science blogs, I was watching the Stanford University lectures on behavioral biology by Robert Sapolsky, which I'd highly recommend to anyone interested in understanding the human condition, specifically from an evo psych perspective. But he said something in the introductory lecture that just clicked with me. It was one of those aha moments where several parts of a jigsaw you've been working on just seem to magically fall into place. I want to play you that clip now.
Some of the time we are just a plain old off-the-rack animal. Second challenge is going to be circumstances where we appear to be just like everybody else, all the other organisms out there, but we do something very different with the similarity. Let me give you an example here. You have two humans, two individuals, who are going through a ritual. They are sitting at a table. They're absolutely silent, they're making no eye contact, and they do nothing more physically taxing than every now and then one of them picks up their hand and moves a little piece of wood on the table. And if these happen to be the right two individuals in the middle of a chess grandmaster tournament, these people are maintaining blood pressure for 6 hours running that you only see in a marathon runner. These people are going through thousands of calories a day doing nothing more than thinking. And this is outrageous because you look at one of these chess grandmasters who's just taken down an opponent and took their queen or whatever, and they will have the exact same physiology as some male baboon on the savannah who's just ripped the stomach open of his worst rival. And we're doing it there just with thought.
Very interesting stuff. Now, I haven't really heard this discussed anywhere else, so I don't know how much study has actually been done on the subject. So this comes with a not insignificant amount of speculation on my part, but I think it's time we started to look at intelligence in terms of physiology. Philosophical dualism is something that Stardusk and I have spoken about at length, and I think one of the most interesting points on the subject was when High Lord Biochemist pointed out during a MGTOW talk that certain gut bacteria actually regulate serotonin levels. It's not that you can't just divide the mind from the body. You can't even divide the body and the mind from other sub-organisms like gut microbia. We have a tendency to abstract the mental from the physical and assume that one should not necessarily affect the other, but there is a very real possibility that the physical differences in strength, stamina, and agility between the sexes could have some real implications on the exercise of long-term strenuous mental activity. Putting a man and a woman in a calm, controlled test environment where they spend 20 minutes completing a standardized IQ test is one thing, but if two players in a chess grandmasters tournament are displaying the same real-time physiology as an athlete running a marathon, then just because the man and the woman consistently score the same IQ on paper does not mean they're necessarily going to be competitive equals when they try to express that IQ in a situation of extreme mental exertion and duress over several hours. A StarCraft or Dota tournament, a chess grandmasters match, or perhaps a job 8 hours a day, 5 days a week doing complex physics calculations at an engineering firm. Despite the popular idea of mental activities being somehow abstracted from the real world, These activities actually place real physical stress on the body, and men and women do have very different bodies, whether they're on the court or at a LAN party. It's something to think about, at least.
Well, there you go. That's interesting stuff, huh? With a person doing the Grandmaster thing with chess is using up as much as a long run track runner or something like that. How about that? So can you judge IQ by common standards or not? Now, since women talk a lot more than men, and that's a proven fact, been tested many times, I think they say about 5,000 words a day, where a man is only about 2,000 or 3,000. Well, if she's talking 5,000 times a day, then perhaps she's thinking pretty fast. Does that mean the women may be smarter than the guys? What do you think? I don't know. I think they're just scratching the surface on this study. Well, all you Putin fans, gather around, all you guys on the right, and some of them that are sort of renegade right-wingers, we tended to, you know, like I said yesterday, we tend to go along with people that seem to be getting a little power, and they give us a few code words, and suddenly we're all on their side, or they're our boy, you know. Well, this thing in eastern Ukraine, which Putin had been swearing that they weren't really involved in, even though we figured there was some involvement, and this insurgency in the east, turns out Putin is up to his ears in it, up to $1 billion invested. They've lost a lot of Russian troops and the whole bit. Now, this is coming from inside the U.S., coming in from the inside of Russia. Dissidents in Russia who are not necessarily, they're not at all Putin's friend. And they're not necessarily our enemies. They may be our better friend than Putin. Of course, the only thing we're interested in the Russian situation is survival of the white Russian people. So anyhow, it turns out that here again, guys in power, you can't trust them. They all are sociopaths. You may not believe it, but in my sojourn in this politics and whatever, and a couple of times I was offered some very juicy things if I'd go along with the power-playing guys, and could have probably gone quite a ways and gotten into a certain amount of power. I don't know how much I could have gotten into, but I knew what would happen. I intuitively knew that having a lot of power, that kind of power, the kind of power that exists in Washington and so forth, was not good for your health, and probably not good for anybody else's health either. And that's why I've pursued a ideological power, the thinking power, the average guy's power, and like that, and assume that if I have any power at all, it's got to be through intellectual debate, ideas, and ideological terrorism, in which you can sleep at night, you don't have to worry about getting lots of money and becoming famous, you don't have to worry about going to all these ha-ha group meetings and bullshitting people. And like that. And so that's what I keep telling you. Anybody in power like Putin was KGB. You cannot trust anybody with that kind of power as being our guy. Now you can say, just like they used to do Reagan. I remember when the Klan was going gaga over Reagan. And I said, I know Reagan. I've been involved with the Reagan machine at one time. And I knew a lot of other people had, too. One of my good friends in California went to Washington to work for Reagan after he won, became president. He was in the intelligence division. He was entrusted with a lot of secret stuff. He was a good friend of mine. And he was only there a couple of years, and he came back from Washington, and he invited me up for a drink at his place. He had a beautiful place. And also, he was a ham radio operator. He had great big 100-foot towers with great big shortwave beams on, and he was on top of a mountain. He could talk to anybody in the world anytime he wanted to. He said, "Tom, that is a total clusterfuck in Washington, D.C. Reagan and those people are just as bad as all the rest." He said, "I went there. I was a pro-Reagan guy. I thought he was a really great guy, and I came back totally disillusioned, and I don't ever want to go back and work in Washington again." So, I mean, and I know a lot of other people that know the score there. That whole, you got to understand, that whole Southern strategy was not anything to do with saving the white race or saving a certain amount of white power or territorial keeping territories and keeping the United States white. Had nothing at all to do with that, but they were inferring it all the time. You know who they all were. Well, they had so many people over on the left that were so way out in la-la land that you tended to go along with the Republicans. And so all these good white people went Republican. Now, I'm going to tell you, the Democrats, no matter how rotten they are, they have a lot better ideas on economy, in many cases, than the right. Because that right, no matter what they tell you, because they lie like a son of a bitch, they'll tell you how they're for the working man. They are no more for the working man than the Koch brothers. These people are for the rich. Well, if the working man is a billionaire that goes into his office once in a while and types on his keyboard, if that's what you mean, a working man, yes. But what they mean is the elite. And that's all they're talking about. And then I see this guy I ran against here in northern Indiana for Congress. He's only been in there a couple of years. And all of a sudden, the game is being played. The man, the senator now, the Republican, who was a no good too, but he's retiring, and maybe he's been pressured out for some reason. I don't know. But all of a sudden, here's this guy that I ran against as a write-in candidate. He's jumping right in there to run for Senate, and he'll get it because the tracks are all greased. Now, this guy is a multi-millionaire farmer. He says, "I'm a farmer." Farmer? Shit. This is hilarious. He's getting, $2 or $3 million a year not to grow things and all that, but yet he rails against working class people that are getting a welfare check or any kind of assistance or anything else. Assumes that everybody, just because they don't have a job, doesn't mean they don't want a job. These guys are total rats, but they're playing brotherhood, apple pie, and motherhood, and anti-abortion shit just to keep your mind off the thing. And here in Indiana, they've got these people snowed so bad between these Republicans and the Christian churches. These people don't know shit from apple butter. I'm telling you, it's terrible. It's unbelievable. And it's a quiet power that you can't almost put your fingers on it. It's all around you. When these politicians come to town, they don't talk to the little people. They don't have town meetings. I mean, you might get one once in 2 or 3 years. They come to town to meet with the corporate leaders. Zimmer Corporation, Biomet Corporation, all these medical big super companies here that exist in the area where I live. But anyhow, going back to Putin, he lied to you and he lied to the world. And you can never deal with people like that. He should have stayed totally out of this struggle over there in the Ukraine. Even no matter how rotten the Ukraine is, it'll fall of its own self and they'll have new leadership over there. And I'm not saying they're not good people over there that are trying to break off, and they have every right to do it, but they have to do it on their own. Russia coming in there to stir the pot is not helping things, and it gives Washington a reason to meddle around. You know, if Washington doesn't have a good, some kind of a reason, normally they will stay a little out of things. But Putin's given them all the ammunition they need. And but anyhow, forget these big shots. Don't ever make them heroes. Don't ever make them heroes because they don't deserve to be heroes. They're not doing anything really for the white race. Like the French right wing. Do you hear them railing against, we got to move out these North Africans. We got to meet them on the beach. We got to punch holes in their boats. We can't rescue them. Fuck them. You don't hear anything like that. It's, oh, it's humanitarian. The poor niggers are drowning. Oh. Well, I don't know. That probably beats being speared by one of their neighbors down in a village down south. But if you don't want to, if they don't want these people to have miserable lives and have them fleeing on little boats out in the Mediterranean, then stop the goddamn occupation. United States, bring the troops home and quit selling weapons to these niggers down in South Africa. And that's just the way it is. So when you, some of the right wings say, oh, that guy's a goddamn socialist left winger. Well, I am more socialist. I'm sure not capitalist. I'm not capitalist at all. I'm free enterpriser. I believe in small business and like that. But you can tell those right-wingers to kiss my ass because that on much of the economics, I'm more socialist, yes. And like much like the European Nordic countries. And I'm sure as hell not going to adhere to any kind of predatory capitalist Republican Party crap. And we got to get people who believe in race straightened out on this because we're never going to go anywhere just saying white power and we're for saving the white race, but we're going to go along with the predatory capitalists and the big bankers and the military-industrial complex. No, you can't win that way. That's a no-win situation. Don't forget it. Virtually all the guys who are so-called leaders in the right-wing racialist struggle are talking republicanism and capitalism. They're going along with that program. They'll never lead you out of the valley of death. They'll never break you out of the death cell, white man. They know what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. So if you're not being screwed by a lot of the progressive left, you're being screwed by the old let's make a buck right. Don't forget it. We're on our own, boys. The issue is race, period. Race, race, race. You know, on this train wreck, it's bringing back to the fore the idea of infrastructure and how this government is doing nothing about infrastructure. Not one goddamn candidate is trying to run for president is talking about infrastructure. Except maybe Bernie up there, that one Jew up in New Hampshire, I guess it is. But none of them, basically none of them in Washington are talking about infrastructure. And so now you got another train wreck, because everything's falling apart. Now, one guy came up with a pretty good idea, I thought. That's a cheap idea. In the meantime, you put two guys in a cab. You have two men as engineers in the cab. That way, if one goes fruity, there's another guy still there. But all that electronic equipment is there to stop a train if it's doing something wrong or going too fast. But guess who stops the funding of all this? The Republican Party. It's a goddamn Republican Party. Right today, the other day, they threw out the TPP, Trans-Pacific Partner, piece of legislation. And that was very fortunate because that'll make America more slavish than it is now. And so those bastards snuck back and brought it back today, and they're voting on it right now. And I was trying to call Washington for 2 hours, trying to put in my objections because they're trying to sneak it out again. And they paid off some of the Democrats that were against it, and they're going along with the Republicans and so forth like that. But you know the funny part? You try to call Washington on that number to tell them what you want, and they'll supposedly put you right through to your congressman or senator. It don't go through. The phone don't work. talk about being a setup. Now, if they get that TPP in there, it's going to be worse than any of the other trade agreements we've made, and they've been bad. This is going to be any country that decides to, like in Australia decided to go against the tobacco industry and trying to promote the health of the country, and the TPP gives the tobacco company the right to sue them and knock out national policy by a corporation. And that's the way they're going to do it. The corporations have superpower now, but if you get this TPP in there, they're going to really be in the driver's seat. No country will be able to do anything without being sued in the world court by a private corporation. I hope you've looked into this and understand it, because I'm telling you, it's suicide. It is suicide. But I'd like for everybody that has any confidence in what I have to say to call your Republican congressmen and senators and tell them the white wing does not support them. And they may say, oh, that's good. We don't want you around anyhow. Well, that's all right. Say, we have influence too. We know a lot of people. And we will not support you because we know you're not really the friend of the white race. We know about the liberal, the progressive Democrats and how so many of them are rats. We know that, but at least they're out in the open where we can see them. You guys hide in the churches, you hide in the schools, you hide all over, and you lie to people like mad, so you're far more dangerous than the left-wing Democrats. That's true. If you don't believe me, you better start studying. Well, I had to go in and flop on the table and get a couple of shots today that were pretty interesting. But I'm fine now, maybe a little bit under the influence of whatever they shot up my arm. Actually, I'm feeling pretty good, boys. Anyhow, let's find Max. I haven't checked in with Max Kaiser lately. I'm sure he's got something to tell us.
Welcome to the Kaiser Report. I'm Max Kaiser. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength. No wonder America is the strongest, freest, most peaceful nation on earth. Stacy. What's your shirt say there?
It says, I love Ock.
Oh, I thought it meant jock, you know, because now that you've got this huge S&P victory in Scotland, the jocks, as they call themselves. I thought that was a reference to loving jocks.
Yeah, actually, it says something else. There is a letter.
There's
before
a consonant
that.
Under yeah. your right lapel?
Well, listen, so you mentioned ignorance is strength, and I want to talk about President Obama, Nobel Peace Prize winner, of course. But I want to talk about his ignorance. Here is a headline because, you know, he spoke last week to Nike, the Nike Corporation, Nike, over in Seattle. And here is a headline based on that. President Obama is badly confused about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So he went there to use this as a way to hit back at critics of the TPP deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, also the TTIP deal, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. And President Obama, according to New York Times, warned critics who say it would undermine American laws and regulators on food safety, workers' rights, and even financial regulations, an implicit pushback against Ms. Warren. They're making this stuff up, he said. This is just not true. No trade agreement is going to force us to change our laws. Now, Dean Baker, over there at CEPR, responding to this, said, President Obama apparently doesn't realize that the TPP will create an investor-state dispute settlement mechanism which will allow tribunals to impose huge penalties on the federal government as well as state and local governments whose laws are found to be in violation of the TPP. These fines could effectively bankrupt a government unless they change the law.
Yeah, well, no, Barack Obama is right. TPP does not change laws in America. It makes them irrelevant.
Exactly.
The laws no longer apply because there's a new global law, a global court, a global corporatocracy, and America and the UK are subject to this new global corporate judicial system and rule of law that supports the same kind of policies that we've seen that have led to premature human extinction, the liberalization of bankers, that they can commit all manner of fraud, most spectacularly here in the UK. So, but, you know, he's a dunderkind, isn't he?
Well, you know, he was there pushing Nike, or Nike, everybody says it differently, as a sort of huge American success story, and in a way it was a success story for America originally, but now, because of all these trade deals, because of unfair currency sort of manipulations, unfair tax regimes, and all this sort of stuff, less than just about 1% of Nike's employees are even American. That, like, manufacturing doesn't happen there. It first moved to China. China became too expensive, so they moved it to Vietnam. I think their average worker there makes 50 cents a day making these Nike shoes.
Well, America fought a civil war to end slavery, and then Barack Obama has allowed slavery to recommence and to perpetuate on a global scale American slave masters at Nike, employing slaves and utilizing slavery in Asian countries. A bit of ironic coming from Barack Obama. I mean, he's the most pro-slavery U.S. president we've ever seen.
Dean Baker also notes about these investor-state dispute settlements. He says that it is also worth noting that the rulings of these tribunals are not subject to appeal, nor are they bound by precedent. Given the structure of the tribunal, the investor appoints one member of the panel, the government appoints a second, and the third is appointed jointly. A future Bush or Walker administration could appoint panelists who would side with foreign investors to overturn environmental safety and labor regulations at all levels of government. So, of course, we're going to see that happen, as we're told over and over that these trade deals, well, we see it here in the United Kingdom, for example, that fracking is introduced despite all of the consultations with the public. 90-something percent of them don't want it, and they decide that, well, it's better for you to just take it.
No, fracking economically makes no sense. No fracker has ever made money that wasn't the product of borrowing, that just as a debt pass-through. It's ecologically a disaster. It has many carcinogenics. Causes cancer, is what that means. And, Barack Obama is, there's the most popular book in American history through the 1800s period was Uncle Tom's Cabin. This was a book exploring the slave plantations in America.
Well, it's going to continue. So if President Clinton is next, or President Jeb Bush, or President Walker, or President Rand Paul, this deal will be in place.
Yeah,
it will happen.
I understand there's a racially sensitive element here, but here you have a country that went through a bloody civil war, ostensibly to end slavery, and the son of a sharecropper, or the grandchild of a sharecropper generation, is committing vast populations around the world to slavery. I mean, this is beyond ironic. It's disgusting.
It's beyond that. Americans don't have jobs. They live on food stamps. Slaves actually had to work. They had to go out in the field and work all day. These people do not work anymore. They don't have even the hope of going out into the field and picking cotton. There's no hope for them.
Yeah, no, I get it. The countries all over the world are guilty of fostering slave labor around the world. But America says it is the one indispensable country. Barack Obama says that America is unique, and that it is the country that all should follow. And so therefore, it's uniquely outrageous.
You have in these trade deals that the bottom 99.9% are going to be locked into a situation where they cannot escape, i.e. declining wages, where the top 1% and the top 0.1% that get to be members of these investor state tribunals, that they get to decide what the sovereign laws are. You know, everybody here, they're all excited because the Tories are going to have an EU referendum. They get to escape the EU. They get to have their sovereignty back. But, of course, we're going to sign the TTIP deal here, i.e. the investor state disputes. So they're always, these 1% have guaranteed profits locked in forever, ever rising profits, in fact, that nothing can ever interfere with their profits, including all those bottom 99% organizing, for example. So he says President Obama apparently also doesn't realize that the higher drug prices that would result from the stronger patent and related protections will be a drag on growth. In addition to creating distortions in the economy, the higher licensing fees paid to Pfizer, Merck, and other U.S. drug companies will crowd out U.S. exports of other goods and services.
Yes, that's right. But the lobby that behind this, bigger than any other lobby, is the intellectual property lobby, which includes the MPAA, killers of Aaron Swartz, jailers of Kim.com, who want to impose draconian copyright regimes globally that go completely against the notion of free speech. You can't have perpetual copyright and free speech. They're mutually exclusive. Either you have free speech or you have limited or no copyright monopoly protection. So Barack Obama, once again, here's a guy who comes out of the milieu of American politics of fantastic oration and free speech champions, clamping down on free speech. This is a betrayal.
But also, of course, I saw somebody on Twitter ask, like, well, if this is a free trade deal, why can't we as Americans import pharmaceuticals from Canada? That's against the law. They don't allow it because, of course, the American pharmaceutical and healthcare industry doesn't want to compete with the negotiated prices that a single-payer system like Canada can negotiate with drug dealers, i.e. Pharmaceutical companies. So they don't want that negotiating power to be granted to Americans. Now, how much more would that sort of trade deal help for the American ordinary person who doesn't even have a job, who lives on food stamps, or who has a job at, you know, selling Nike in a retail outlet?
All right, look, forget about the American Civil War. Forget about free rights. Forget about the Bill of Rights. Forget about the Constitution. Let's go back to the Age of Enlightenment, which separated the feudal period with the post-Enlightenment period. What this trade deal does, so-called trade deal, is it brings back, solidifies, codifies a new world order of potentates and kleptocrats globally who exert their monopoly pricing,
yes,
and their slave labor mandate unimpeded legalization of slavery to bring back the same concentrations of power we had in the Middle Ages. Forget the Enlightenment.
But there's no route out. It doesn't matter what nationality you are, what race you are, what gender you are. There are only two classes, and you can't escape those. That top 1% will be protected forever. You know, their divine right is for eternal now outside of the system, because they have these trade deals to prevent you from ever competing with them.
Well, that's absolutely correct. Going back historically, the only time there's ever been a break from this would be on the back of incredible technological advances. Could be the printing press. Could have been the electric light bulb. Or in this case, the blockchain technology of Bitcoin is the savior out away from TTIP and these other trade agreements. And that's why we push it as hard as we do on this show. And we want all countries everywhere to support the blockchain technology.
Forget countries. It's the individuals. It's the people. Because we're all one. We're outside. If you're not part of the... If Barack Obama isn't negotiating a trade deal on your behalf, you should be on the blockchain.
Instead of being on the chain gang.
True.
All right. Well, thank you, Stacy.
Thank you, Max.
Stay tuned for the second half.
Hey, thanks, Max. You're always great. I like you. Yeah. You put it straight. There's so much also, like I said, of the so-called left that we can use that... in the economy and so forth, and almost all the racial struggles in history have been left-wing leading. They've tried to, ever since World War II, put the racial struggle on the right. And truth be known, that's not true. You go back and check it out with the various racial struggles, and they've primarily been more on the left because they've been usually more pro-white working class. And so how in the hell did we end up on the right with all these right fucking wingers running things? And how come so many of them like me got sucked into it? For a long time I was sucked into it. But I finally figured out we can, as a racial struggle, we cannot win by adopting right-wing and Republican conservative positions. We can't. And we'll have to deal with those enemies on the left. There's no doubt about that. But there's a lot of good things being said on the left that is pro-working class. Now, you can't drag them into being white racial separatists, but that's all right. I've been adopting those things for quite a long time, and it's getting around. The word's getting around now. It probably hurt me in some ways, because I'm sure none of those old hardcore right wing type racial leaders will want to finance or help me at all. They're too busy gathering money up for their next trip to the wherever. Yeah, no. And, of course, none of them on the left, no matter how much they see that our policies are mirroring a lot of their policies on ecology, the environment, and finance, and anti-capitalism, and so forth, they're just as stubborn, just as twisted. Oh, we never could say anything good about Tom Metzger and what he's doing. But we've got to bring these elements together. It's got to start at the bottom, not at the top. We got to start getting the right information out to young people, especially young people that are already on the left. And then we can talk to them and tell them what we agree with them on, and we're all together on that. We're all together on the environment. We're all together on anti-predatory capitalism. We're all together on anti-war and anti-military-industrial complex. We're all together on foods and against the big drug companies for what the things they're doing and the companies that are destroying the land and like that and all this bioengineered food and all that. We're already there. I am. I hope you are. So once you've got people that you can sit down and talk to about that, well, what's next? Well, just say, well, don't you think we should have a right to our own struggle here, the territorial imperative, that the white race should have the option of separating from whatever race it wants to separate from, and without a big fight about it? Certainly can do it at least voluntarily. I say our recruiting grounds are to the left, not to the right. Because the young people that are still going along with the Republican nonsense and these phony new conservatives that are beating the bushes and recruiting blacks all the time to be the new conservatives and just going gaga over blacks that say they're conservative, which proves they're not really racially conscious at all. None of these guys are racially conscious, you know, but they will give you a bunch of, I'm fighting for your right to keep bear arms, you know, motherhood, apple pie. But by God, don't ever cut the military war spending budget. That's, if you want to really find out where a guy's coming from, how do you feel about almost $1 trillion this last year being spent on military arms? How do you feel about that? Well, what they're going to tell you is, well, I don't like the niggers, but we got to defend ourselves, and they're going to get us if we don't defend ourselves. And the goddamn Russians are after us, and the ISIS is going to attack us. Well, you know you've lost them right there, because it don't make any difference how much they don't like Negroes. That's only a part of it, the Negro race. The rest of it is you cannot have a strong white country that's unhealthy, with crappy water, with crappy food, with a bad infrastructure, and where most of the money is funneled into the top 1 or 2%, even though they're white. They're white rats, sociopaths. We've got to change the way of thinking, and it's not too late. It's not too late. I think we should dialogue with any of these people that want to dialogue, including blacks as far as that's concerned, which I have for many times over the years, without much success, I must admit. But I think it's worthwhile, especially with the white left. But you can't use the old right-wing approach because it's failed. They don't even work among their own people. They're whistling past the graveyard all the time. So I think I've sort of brought you to the point of demarcation. Now, nothing really serious is going to happen in my lifetime. I'm too old now. But at least, like George Lincoln Rockwell said, I may not live to see the white revolution, but I'll see it start. Unfortunately, George was too right-wing, too conservative for his own good, even though he had to have known he was hated. The right-wing conservatives and even the right-wing racialists hated his guts because he had the guts to try a new method, a new way. And even though it's essentially failed, it there was offspring of it. There was things that happened among people. I know I had my contacts with those people way back, and I didn't buy the whole nine yards, and I certainly didn't buy this dressing up in uniforms and marching down the street and overtly displaying the swastika on my front door, even though I highly respect the symbol. Anyhow, it's moving in that direction. And if we're going to win, we got to move. We got to move. We got to change. We got to dump all this shit, all these right-wing so-called racial chat rooms, because even though a lot of the people are well-intentioned, good-hearted, a lot of them, they're wrong. And this the right wing's got them right where they want them. The Republican Party plays the racial struggle among the right wing like a fiddle. They play them like a fiddle, and so does the government. Why do you think that they don't talk about any left-wing racists? You know, I've said over and over again on many documentaries, I'm more of a left-wing race, white racist. Did you ever see that in print? No, you won't see it in print. Will you see Morris Dees talk about it? No, scares the shit out of them. It scares the shit out of them if the white racial struggle turns left. I mean the good part of the left. I don't mean the obvious kikes and so forth that are up to no good. So think about it. God damn it. We got to get this show on the road, and it's going to take us a long time to get there. But if we don't start now, throw in the towel. And it starts by on things we can agree on with a left winger, no matter how he feels about the race situation, agree with him. And if he calls your name, say, oh, that's all right. If Tom Harmon, if I agree with a lot of his economic views and so forth, and his views about the government, and I do, if he says, well, I don't want nothing to do with Tom Metzger, I don't care, as long as what I'm saying gets out. Same with other left wing talk show people and so forth. And I even use their stuff, and it must really piss them off. But that I'm going to go whichever way works. And that's what you got to do. And forget about that flag-waving pro-America stuff and think about your race first and play it smart on a job and don't expose yourself as being a white racial separatist. And don't do that. And don't fall into the traps they set for you. Guys are all the time emailing me how they've lost their jobs. Why'd you lose your job? Well, I said something about being pro-white. Well, dummy, you're behind enemy lines. You're just like you'd been parachuted into a foreign country during a war, and you're considered the enemy. They hate your guts. They want to put you in prison, but if they can't figure any way of doing it, they destroy your job, your ability to get an income. They destroy your family if they can, cause your wife to want to leave you, your kids to hate your guts. You got to get smarter than hell, and you got to get clever in hell, and you got to use your enemy's weight against him. It's called jiu-jitsu. Use his strength against him. You can do it by planting seeds, rumors, all kinds of things you can do. But you can't hang out with the right wing anymore in the right wing so-called racial struggle, because it's defunct. It's worse than defunct. It's become a part of the system. I got great news for you, boys and girls. This is you're really going to like this one. Worse is better. Remember that. Worse is better. They're actually floating a list of people who are going out beating the bushes to pressure the Treasury Department, the Treasury Department of the United States, to put the black gal from down south, Harriet Tubman, who was the, I think she was the head of the Underground Railroad for the blacks. Harriet Tubman, black as the ace of spades. They want to put her on the $20 bill. And I encourage that. I want you to support that. Because nothing's going to piss these people, drive more of these people who are conservative right-wingers off their ass over and leave that area. Because when they see they're going to put Harriet Tubman, the nigger, on the $20 bill, believe me, that's good. Every white working guy that pulls a 20 out of his pocket will see that ugly nigger face on it. Couldn't be better, boy. Our enemies fall into our hands all the time. They fall for everything we're trying to promote. And worse is better. It works. In fact, the person who started that is probably one of our people undercover, a lone wolf up there doing exactly what I, acting exactly how I told him to operate. If you want to find out more about this TPP and all this treachery going on, TradeTreachery.com is where you can find a lot more exposure of this ruling class plan to really enslave you even more. TradeTreachery.com. No, not trade. I think those pills they gave me at the doctor's office that got me going here. TradeTreachery.com. There you go. I knew you could do it, Tommy.
Crisis.org.
Also, you've got economyincrisis.org. Economyincrisis.org. I don't know whether you heard, but Japan is voting to introduce the draft again and change the laws in Japan to where they could go to the aid of a friendly country. Here we go. Shintoism is back in the saddle, man. The warrior class is coming back in Japan. When I lectured in Japan several years ago, I told them, you better get up and get at it, because if you don't, you're going to be sitting ducks here in Japan. Took them a long time to get the message. Don't forget, America's sniper Chris Kyle was an asshole, trained by killers to be a killer, and he in turn was killed by another killer that was trained to kill. Sort of a karmic, interesting turn of events, isn't it? Well, all you right-wingers out there, we've got our heroes too. Remember Joseph Paul Franklin? That's a long time ago. The right wing never talk about him, unless they're derisive about him. He was a sharpshooter too, and he only had one good eye. And he started, unfortunately, at the bottom, like, unfortunately, most guys do, instead of at the top. However, he did nearly get Vernon Jordan, which was another black lackey of the, I forget which administration. Well, whenever you're thinking about it, look up Joseph Paul Franklin. He was our sharpshooter. And I support him. His ideas and so forth like that, not necessarily the tactics or the plan, but he was a good man, Joseph Paul Franklin. Now, ask your right-wing leaders over there, your racist right-wing, what they think of Joseph Paul Franklin. Do they support Joseph Franklin, his memory, and what he tried to do for the white race, or don't they? And you'll find out real quick where that segment of this struggle is at. The right wing dropped Joseph Paul Franklin like a hot potato. He went around the country snipering all kinds of blacks and mixed races. And when Joseph Paul Franklin nearly killed Vernon Jordan, he was the head of the Urban League, and he was going into a motel with a white woman in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And Fort Wayne, Indiana is only about 50 miles from where I'm at. I've seen the motel where it happened. Anyhow, just think about Joseph Paul Franklin. He died for his race. He may not have been perfect, but he was sure a hell of a lot better than anything the right has got going right now. Now, I have a great article on Joseph Paul Franklin and what he was into and what he got accomplished. And I've got it photocopied. It's about 5 or 6 pages. And if you'll send me a stamped self-addressed envelope with 2 stamps on it, I'll send you a copy of it free. It's great reading. It was from an old Detective Cases magazine from back in 1981 is when it was published. And it's a big article on Joseph Paul Franklin with pictures and maps and everything else. And I think you'll like it. Just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope with 2 stamps on it, and I'll send it out to you right away. Sorry, it's not available through the Internet. Too old an article. It might be out there someplace, but I don't know where it's at. But I'll just send you the photograph copy. And we need to find out what happened to Joseph Paul Franklin's ashes. I should have done it a long time ago, after he was executed. I don't know whether it went to any family of his or not. Anybody that can find me any more information on that, I'd like to know. At least I'd like to know if he's buried someplace, where he's buried. That's it for now. I'll be back tomorrow. Tomorrow is Freya's Day, Ladies' Day, She-Wolf Day in the bunker. That's right. And remember, no cause is lost as long as at least one person is still fighting for it. 14-5.